This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Jared Butler strolls over the midcourt line near sideline, 35 feet away. This ball game is over. 122-102. Bulls win! Bulls win! Bulls win! And it's on to the play-in tournament against Miami Wednesday.
Chuck Swirsky heard right here on The Score and the Bulls Radio Network. Rami Makhlouf with you. It's The Score Evening Show live from the Hyundai Score Studios and brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. The board could create a good problem for the Chicago Bears at pick number 10. I'll talk about that with you coming up at about 7:20. But joining me to talk some Bulls right now, he covers that basketball team for us here at The Score and 670thescore.com. Pleasure to welcome in Cody Westerlund. Cody, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Real good, man. I was talking about this Bulls team before I brought you on, and despite the same record now, essentially for the last 3 years, they had one more win 2 years ago than they've had the last couple of seasons, but it feels different, and not just different in terms of the faces, but this roster feels like it could get some traction to actually move out of the middle of the NBA pack. Is that crazy, Cody, looking into the future to say that?
Oh, I think it's still a little crazy, depending on what your definition of the middle is. I think there's some hope. I think there's reason for optimism. You go back to the last couple of years, like you're pointing out, 39 wins a year ago, 40 the year before that, and it always feels better when you have a young group of guys leading the way to 39 mm-hmm. wins. So there's no doubt that in that comparison, standing alone, the arrow is pointed up more. But if the middle to you is out of the play-in into the 5 or 6 seed, yeah, I can see that here in the next couple of years to really hop up in the East in that top 3, even top 4. I think they still really need to get a really good wing player or small forward type who fits around Josh Giddey, Modest Bouzelis, Kobe White, because those three right now seem like the core and nothing's ever set in stone, but they like how those guys have played down the stretch, and they're going to be the main pieces on the team next year as we look forward, barring a surprise. So I guess I'm with you to an extent to answer that question, but I'd be curious to see what you think too.
Yeah, as far as this current roster as it stands, I do think they could, as you said, move out of the play-in and be a potential 5 or 6 in the Eastern Conference. But even beyond that, Cody, I just look at a roster full of athletic 20-somethings that can shoot it. And on top of that, some guys around them with movable contracts who might be attractive to other teams out there who might be looking to potentially move a superstar who wants out of his current situation. I the Bulls are a more attractive trade partner in my eyes than they've been for a few years now.
You're getting a little ahead of yourself, Rami, with the superstar four pieces on the Bulls roster, right?
Like, can a guy dream, Cody? Why do you got to kill dreams, man?
You can dream, but you'd be saying bye to Kobe White, Matis Buzelis, and a handful of first-round picks, and then what do you have, right? So I think the best approach for the Bulls is they shouldn't be rushing anything, right? They should keep their mindset on the age range of those players, you know, from 20 years old to 24, 25-ish. Keep that age range in mind. Make the most out of this first-round pick they get, which could be 12, could be 13. Outside chance it jumps into the top four if they're losing in the play-in. Could be 15 if they get through the play-in and lose in the first round of the playoffs. So a lot of uncertainty there, but try to get a good young player. Maybe that player has a really high ceiling if you're lucky. If not, hopefully he's a young player that can project to be in your rotation. Stay patient. Eventually use the cap space. Eventually use the financial flexibility later down the road to add someone in a trade. Like, I don't think you're looking at anything this summer that they need to be doing by way of adding a star player. That would be speeding it up way too quickly to me, but I'm going to remain skeptical they can build that until I see more from Josh Giddey as a two-way player, more from Matis Buzelis by way of consistency, and not to say he should be there yet because he's a rookie, but this thing just really takes time, in my opinion, for them to do it.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I was looking like 2-3 years out in terms in terms of roster building and making some of those. I mean, it would be great if they got into some Kevin Durant talks this summer, but more realistically, I was looking 2 or 3 years out of forming this roster, Cody, and feeling like the 2 or 3 year outlook is better than what it has been for a few years in my eyes. But let's zoom in. Let's zoom in from the 30,000 foot view and look at this team that on Wednesday night will be taking on the Heat in the play-in game right here on the Score. Here, Chuck and Bill on the call. And I don't know, Cody, I look at that Heat team and it felt to me for a long time like they were, after the Jimmy Butler trade, like they were tanking hard. I think they lost 8 or 9 out of 10 at one point, but they kind of turned things up here at the end. And this looks like, this looks like a team that actually wants to win now versus what we saw post-Jimmy Butler trade.
Yeah, this is an interesting matchup, right? Because the Bulls swept the Heat in the season series, and all of those games happened, all three of them, after the Zach LaVine trade, after Jimmy Butler left. So you have the prototype or kind of bones of the same roster, obviously, with a few guys out here and there. Bulls just took care of the Heat last Wednesday at the United Center by 8 points. Pretty much controlled that game throughout, but it wasn't like a blowout, you know, or anything like that, to clinch the 9 seed effectively and host this game on the upcoming Wednesday. The thing to me, I think the Bulls are better, right? If they played 10 times, or if they played 15 times, if they played 15 times, I think the Bulls would win 8 of them, right? They played 10 times, I think the Bulls win 6 of them. But you got Eric Spoelstra with a few days off to game plan. I think he might be the best coach in the NBA. That is scary. This Heat team is not much worse than the Bulls, right? They have played them tough in the two games before the most recent one. The Heat led by 9-11 going in the fourth quarter, and the Bulls did their fireworks, and it just went absolutely crazy during that stretch for the Bulls where they were awesome in the fourth quarter, always rallying. So, like, this Heat team has clearly controlled a couple of these games for a while against the Bulls. But I think the Bulls have a little more firepower. If Josh Giddey, assuming he's healthy with the wrist injury he's been dealing with a little bit, and if Kobe White can get it going, he only shot 39% against the Heat in 3 games this year. But that's a really small sample size. If he plays like he has been, you know, for the past month, month and a half, I feel like the Bulls have a tad more firepower, which is why I'd like him in that case. But I can't get over the Eric Spoelstra thing. Like, I think he's going to find a way to just grind out a close win for the Heat on Wednesday at United Center. And that's why it's going to be a challenge for these young Bulls players. And this is something Bulls management and coaching staff have wanted all year, was for these players to be in this game. Fans might not care that much in the big picture about a 9-10 playing game, but the Bulls feel like these young players can learn something out of it.
And this is the third straight year that they'll face the Heat in the play-in. And we know how the first two went, Cody. How bad do the Bulls want this, and not just to win the play-in, but not to be on the losing end to the Heat for the third straight year?
They do. These young players, I mean, you can just look how they've played in the last month and a half, right? A lot of teams in the NBA, don't organizationally, some of them give up. The players are not giving up, but you can tell some veterans get checked out late in the season. The Heat went through a stretch where they looked like their veterans were out of sorts, checked out for a while, like you mentioned, played better here in the closing stretch. But this Bulls team has gone so hard every single night, winning, what, 15 of their last 20, and they've been really competitive in some of these others that were losses. I mean, they lost by a few points in Houston, and the Rockets are a really good team playing good ball late in the season, a deep team that plays defense. So the Bulls have brought it pretty much every single night for a couple months here now, and they're not sitting there crying in the locker room if they lose or something, but like you can tell this means something. Like they're proud of how hard they've played, the push they've made late in the season, and absolutely they want to win this. A few of these guys have been on the team. Obviously, Kobe White, Nikola Vucevic had big roles in these games the past couple of years when they've lost to the Heat in the playoffs, or in the play-in, I should say here. Some of these other characters are new, right? Like Kevin Herter's probably going to start for the Bulls in this game. New character in this. Some of these younger guys, obviously, Bouzelis being a rookie and stuff, so they'll have big roles too. So I don't know that they all remember it, but the ones that did lose, they certainly will remember that.
Talking with Cody Westerlund, covers the Bulls for 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Joining me on The Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. What do we know? You mentioned Josh Giddey and the injury, also Lonzo Ball dealing with the wrist injury. What do we know about those two guys heading into this play-in game on Wednesday night?
Yeah, if I had to guess, thumbs up for Josh Giddey, thumbs down for Lonzo Ball. Giddey's been dealing with, I guess the best way to put it is just an ailing wrist, but he had the triple-double, 28 points, and shot 3 of 6 on three-pointers against the Heat last Wednesday. That's the last game Josh Giddey played. And after the game, he said his wrist felt as good as he could expect it to feel after 80 games to that point in the season. So he downplayed it. To me, his performance was just sensational, terrific. I didn't feel like watching him shoot that it bothered him that much. But Billy Donovan has maintained that it is a problem. He used the words, it's a problem. I also wonder if he used the words, it's a problem, in part because they'd rested him against the Cavs and they wanted to make it look like, hey, there's a reason he's on here. This is really concerning, and maybe it
wasn't
as bad.
You got to sell it.
Sell it sometimes. So fully expect Josh Giddey to play on Wednesday. I would think that he could be able to keep up his quality play for that. Lonzo Ball, the wrist sprain that he has is basically preventing him from shooting the ball comfortably. And basically from what I've heard, I mean, when he's doing stuff on the court in practice, the Bulls' hope here was today, tomorrow, for him to get back to full basketball activities. But when he's been doing stuff recently, I was under the impression he was already doing some basketball activities, but it was mainly just passing and dribbling, and the pain has been in the shot, right? So he hasn't gone full speed with all his teammates on the floor while shooting. He would need to clear that big hurdle, feel good, because they can't trot Lonzo Ball out in this game if they're going to play 4-on-5 on offense, right? You just can't do that in a win-or-go-home game. So that's why I don't expect him to play Wednesday unless we really see him feeling good at practice tomorrow and that wrist basically pain-free when he shoots, because he can't follow through right now very comfortably with the wrist, and that's affecting his shot and making him inefficient from three-point range.
You know, I think it was on the heels of that Lakers win, the Josh Giddey half-court shot where, you know, Bulls mania was running as wild as it has in a little while, not as crazy as we've seen it, obviously, Cody, but I got caught up in a little bit, and I was like, you know, I think this team is getting out of the play-in, and not only because of how the Bulls were playing, but the Magic were struggling a little bit of that at that point. They've now won 7 of their last 3. If they get past Miami on Wednesday, how do you like their chances against either that Magic team or this Hawks team to actually get out of the play-in and give Bulls fans some actual playoff basketball to watch here this season?
I would like their chances a lot against the Hawks. They split the season series. Ayo Dosunmu is hurt out for the year, and he's been the quote-unquote Trey stopper or the slow Trey Young down guy. He's played him really well. So that factor's not there, which, I mean, might be concerning for the Bulls. But they've just, it feels like they've played the Hawks really well in a few big moments. Last year in the play-in, Kobe White lit them up. And I just feel like the Bulls can handle the Hawks and that they would. The matchup against the Magic would be really concerning because that team has rediscovered its defensive form in the last few weeks. They also had all those injuries, had the ups and downs like so many teams have had, but they're playing much better defense lately. And in a play-in setting, it would be a real grind. And you got a team with Banchero, Wagner. Like, those guys can get hoops on their own in these ISO situations, in these key situations. And the Bulls have some of those guys, too. I just think that would be more of an uphill challenge. So if the Bulls can get past the Heat, I mean, I would pick the Magic to beat the Hawks if I got to pick one. I mean, they're hosting the game. They're a better seed for a reason. And I would like the Bulls' chances to get past the Hawks. But we got to see how this gets sorted out Tuesday night, Wednesday night, right?
Would they give the Cavs any trouble? Could they be like a tough five or six-game series for the Cavs if they got all the way through, Cody?
No. No. The Cavs just score 140 points on the Bulls so easily, Rami. It's just so easy. That game at the United Center, it was like tied around 115 with 6 minutes to go or something. Seven, I'd have to look it up. They just score like 22 points in 4 minutes. I mean, they just get anything they want on the Bulls defense basically every time all season. So could they make it a track meet? Would it be a fun game? Would they be down four early in the fourth quarter of a couple of games? Yeah, absolutely. But if you're asking, are the Cavaliers stressed out in the final minutes of those games? I would say probably no. I wouldn't see any path to that series getting beyond five games. And I don't think it would be that much of a stressor for the Cavs. But look, I've been wrong before. A few years ago, they played the Bucks in the first round. And the Bulls outplayed the Bucks for two games in Milwaukee and were tied 1-1. And then the Bucks absolutely blew their doors off in Chicago, right? So we've seen weird things happen in series. So it could be competitive for a little bit. But I don't think it would be much trouble for the Cavs. They just score so easily on the Bulls.
Cody, one more for you, and this is more just a big picture NBA question that's been bouncing around my head for the last couple of days, and seeing how tight the playoff races were heading all the way to the last game of the season. In the Western Conference, you have the 2 seed and the 6 seed separated by what, 2 games, 3 games. In the Eastern Conference, it's a little more tightly bunched than we've seen in a while. And I think Adam Silver in the NBA would point at this and go, see, parity. This is what we've been trying to do for a long time. Here's that parity NBA fans have been looking for. Is it that, or is it just less emphasis put on the regular season by these teams so everybody's record kind of looks the same at the end, even though there are like one or two teams in each conference that are clearly better than the rest?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both. I would say to your latter point, the NBA regular season has now become more of a silly season to me than I can ever remember watching, right? Like, the maneuvering for draft position starts earlier than ever, it feels like. And you don't know who's going to be on the court night to night. You don't know how invested the organization, I always go back to that word, the organization is going to be in winning games, right? The Toronto Raptors out there, we know they were trying to tank, but it's weird when Scotty Barnes scores 24 points in 20 minutes and doesn't play the fourth quarter, right? So, like, and that's an example, again, of a team maneuvering for draft position, which is different from many of these teams you're referencing that were fighting hard for those 6 seeds and such in the playoffs, for example, and around each other. But even then, like, it's not every night consistently, which I think, for example, that's why the Clippers-Warriors game was so cool Sunday, because so much was at stake and they went so hard. And there were a few of those examples late in the season. So I think parity is good to a point, but I also, the NBA's been built on superstars. It's been built on dynasties. That's who we remember. That's probably when ratings were highest in the past, certainly when MJ was winning 6 titles here in Chicago. So There's wisdom on both sides, but the NBA, probably what they want is those dominating teams and superstars at the top and then the bunched up race for the 6th seed. So in many ways, they got what they did want, right, on the last day of the regular season in the Western Conference, having so many moving parts. Didn't play out like that in the East, but that's something that they liked. That was part of the reason for putting the play-in tournament in, is making more seeds matter, right? Like the one seed matters, the six seed matters, 7 and 8 matter more than 9 and 10. Now all of a sudden 10 matters and 11, 10 and 11 there matter. In the past, that wasn't the case. So you could probably go a couple ways on that question.
That's Cody Westerlund, covers the Bulls for 670 The Score, and check out his work at 670thescore.com. Follow him on Twitter at Cody Westerlund, and my guest for the last few minutes. Cody, really appreciate the time and the insight, man. Hopefully we continue to have more Bulls basketball to talk about in the future.
Yep. Have a great rest of the show, and happy to hop on anytime.
Same to you, Cody. And he joins me on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. We'll hit a quick break on the other side, talk some Bears, and the board could create good problems and tough decisions for the Bears come draft time. It's Rami Makhlouf. It's Score Evenings right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score.
For where we are right now, I'm not confident on exactly where, you know, the first 9 picks are going to fall.
Yeah.
But that's something that we'll look into, and we'll definitely weigh the option of, hey, if we can move back and collect, you know, a certain pick in this range, could that be really beneficial for us as well? So, yeah, that'll be in play.
There's Bears GM Ryan Poles talking about what their options might be come draft day. Rami Makhlouf with you, Score Evenings, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Taking you right up to Cubs baseball as they continue their road trip in San Diego against the Padres. Pregame coverage begins at 8:05. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer will be on the call for first pitch at 8:40 right here and on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Dane Brugler of The Athletic, he put out The Beast, that's his NFL draft guide that he puts out every year. It's as thorough, as good as any draft guide or any draft resource that you'll run into out there. I'll be part of the Score's draft coverage coming up in a couple of weeks. Well, just in about 10 days from right now will be the NFL draft. And this will be my number one resource. And I think it's number one resource for a lot of people. I mean, this thing is thorough, and he puts a lot of work into it. He says it's over a year's worth of work that he puts into this thing, and It's cool in the way that you can kind of interact with it. You can go position by position. You can go by your team, or you can just pull up the top 100. And regardless of position, you just ranks the top 100 players. And I was looking at that today. And if Dane Brugler is right over there at The Athletic, and if NFL front offices are looking at this in any way, shape, or form in the same way that Dane is, then this draft board, and you just heard Ryan Poles talking about it right there, this draft board shapes up very, very nicely for the Chicago Bears at number 10, just based on the needs of the teams ahead of them, the positions where there is some depth and some quality players, and where the Bears' needs fall. It really, the board shapes up really, really well for the Bears. The biggest problem that they might have, as I look at the top 100 and Dane Brugler's The Beast, his 2025 NFL draft guide, is there might be a couple of guys, or maybe even three guys, depending on how the board falls, that fall to the Bears at 10 that will all be very logical and viable picks for them based on what they need. Here's how Dane stacks up the top 10. His the number one player in the draft to him is Travis Hunter. He's the best player in the draft. And again, this is regardless of position. This is just who he thinks are the best football players and will make the most impact at the next level. So he's got Hunter number one, Abdul Carter two, Ashton Jeanty three, Mason Graham, the defensive tackle from Michigan, at four, Jalen Walker, edge rusher from Georgia, five, Will Campbell. Bears fans have heard a lot about him. The offensive tackle from LSU at six, Armon Membo, another offensive tackle Bears fans have heard a lot about out of Missouri. He's number seven. Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State. I talked with Mike Renner of CBS Sports earlier. That's who he has the Bears taking in his mock draft at number 10. Another couple of edge rushers in Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M and Mike Green from Marshall make out the top 10. And then you could even go beyond that and Colston Loveland, another tight end out of Michigan. He has him as the 11th best player in this draft. You could even go a little bit further, all the way at 14. People talking about the Bears needing a linebacker, Jihad Campbell from Alabama will be right there. So this draft board, like I said, based on the needs of the teams ahead of them, based on the depth and the quality at positions and what the Bears need, it shapes up really well for them. The biggest question that they might have is which one of these guys do we take? That's a good problem to have if two or three guys fall to you, but I don't know necessarily what I... Now, I'm a big Ashton Jeanty guy. And I'm just throwing names out there, just reckless speculation here on Score Evenings with yours truly, Rami Makhlouf. Big Ashton Jeanty guy, but let's say somehow Mason Graham fell to the Bears at 10, along with an Ashton Jeanty. And a lot of that depends on how high these teams that need quarterbacks in the top 10 are on this quarterback class in terms of these other positions falling to the Bears. But if an Ashton Jeanty and Mason Graham are both there for you, which way do you go? If an Ashton Jeanty and a Will Campbell were there for you, which way do you go? Mason Graham and Will Campbell somehow slipped to you, which way do you go? A couple of these edge rushers or Tyler Warren, it could make for a really, really tough and interesting decision for the Chicago Bears if two or more of these guys who are top 10, top 15 players in this draft, according to, again, Dane Brugler and The Beast, his 2025 NFL draft guide, and others. I mean, his rankings aren't that much more different than other rankings I've seen, just more thorough in terms of the information, the background, the scouting reports that you can get on these guys. If two or three of these guys slips to you, and it's a couple of different things that the Bears will have to consider. How much of a need do they have at one of those two or three positions that a player is available at? And just how good are the... If you think Ashton Jeanty, and I do, if you think Ashton Jeanty is a... And this is a label we hear thrown around a lot with quarterbacks. We heard it last year with Caleb Williams. If you think he's a generational prospect at running back, even if you think you might need an offensive tackle more than you need that running back, if you think he's that type of player who changes your team instantly and will for a number of years, I think you make that move. Even if you have a need that's you think is greater, if you think the player is that special, whether it's Genty or somebody else. I know a lot of people think Mason Graham is that type of difference maker on the other side of the ball, on defensive line. If that's what you believe, even if you feel like you might have a greater need, I'm going with that guy. If both guys are just kind of, you know, blue chip, but not the special generational game changer, I think then you maybe lean more towards the need than you do the talent of that player. For me, it's Ashton Genty before anybody else, if he slips to you at 10. But I would understand if it was Genty and Campbell, if you went with Will Campbell, or if it was Mason Graham and Genty, if you went with Mason Graham. Because those are both guys that have performed at a high level. They have high grades and great positions of need. But if you think one of these guys is a difference maker or a generational talent, then that's where I'm going. Speaking of Ashton Genty and speaking of The Athletic, Austin Mock of The Athletic. A whole article today, and I like Austin's work. Highly respect. I think I've had him here on this very show. High level of respect for Austin and his work and his thoughts on the NFL. Whole article today. Picking Ashton Genty in the top 10 would be a mistake. Learning wrong lesson from Saquon Barkley. And as he does, Austin makes a strong case. He lays it out point by point of why taking Ashton Genty in the top 10 would be a mistake. I'll give you sort of the bullet points, the cliff notes of it, if you want to go check it out at The Athletic. He talks about learning the wrong lesson. Teams maybe going in a little too hard on the running back position because of what they saw the Eagles do with Saquon Barkley this year. Mike Renner referenced that when I was talking with him about Ashton Genty in the first hour from CBS Sports. Use the rewind function if you want to go back and check that out. But he points out that before they went and got Saquon Barkley, they did what smart organizations do, what Bears fans were screaming for or now in hindsight realize the Bears should have done. They targeted premium positions, quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle, defensive line, cornerback, and solidified their offensive line before they went and got a Saquon Barkley. Well, you could make the argument. Now, we don't know per se that the Bears offensive line is all the way fixed. We'll see how this thing comes together with the moves that they made this offseason. But if you're talking about those premium positions, QB, we'll see if Caleb Williams is who they think he is and who we all think he is, but they're not looking for a quarterback right now. They've already used the resources at wide receiver. Offensive tackle, defensive line, cornerback, all positions that the Bears could upgrade at. Not necessarily positions of need, and they have to go out and get somebody, but all positions where they could upgrade at. So a point there in Austin's favor to a degree that, yeah, there might be other positions that are more important in the NFL than running back is. He also talks about the money of the whole thing. And again, he goes back to Saquon Barkley. He says his cap hit last year was just $3.8 million, the equivalent to what the 14th or 15th pick in this year's NFL draft will be paid. And then he does the math, and he says, assume for a moment Genty plays well enough to warrant a second contract as the number 10 pick. He'd make about $6.6 million per year over 4 years of his contract. Right now, the top 10 running backs in the NFL make an average of $12.5 million, which means Genty is a top 10 back. A team would only be saving about $6 million per year on his rookie deal. And he says at wide receiver, you'd be saving about $25 million against the cap. If you had a top 10 player on a rookie contract at edge rusher, you'd be saving about $27.5 million per year versus another top 10 rusher if that guy played up to that level in his rookie contract. And I would say to Austin, A, if we're talking about a wide receiver, again, the Bears aren't using any more resources on wide receiver right now. And B, who is that edge rusher? Who's that edge rusher on this team or that you can go out and get that would perform at that level? And then the last point that, well, last couple of points that he makes, I think they kind of go hand in hand, is no running back is going to come in and single-handedly change a run game or an offense that you need blockers. And he gets to the Bears in this one. He points out that last year, both Barkley and Gibbs, Jahmyr Gibbs of the Lions, were 1-2 in the league in yards before contact, 2.5 and 2.4 respectively. And then he talks about the teams in the top 10, including the Bears, and those teams averaged 1.3 yards before contact. And that's obviously a problem. And the Bears were one of the worst. And then he points out, lastly, and again, this goes kind of with the last point, there aren't a lot of running backs taken in the top 10 that teams can point at and go, look, we've won. And Barkley is the example, again, where he came from. The New York Giants didn't win a thing with Saquon Barkley after drafting him with the second pick in the draft. I would say to that, terrible organizations aren't going to win, even with great players. Like, you, getting Saquon Barkley wasn't the mistake that the Giants made. It was everything they did around him. And all in all, I'll just go back to the point that Ashton Jeanty might be a generational running back. I'll go back to Dane Brugler's draft guide. He has him third ranked overall, which is rare for a running back. Last year, his number one running back was Jonathan Brooks. He was 48th overall. So I think this guy's different, man. I do. And if the Bears are confident that they've shored up the offensive line in a satisfactory manner, and they don't see a pass rusher out there that they think is special, generational, difference-making type of talent, and you have a chance to go get that kind of talent at the running back position, I would go and do it. Lots of good points made by Austin in that piece there. And I see the other side of the argument. I still would do it. Hit a quick break. Wrap up the Score Evening Show with yours truly, Rami Makhlouf, right after this. We might know, actually, we do know, one of the picks that the Chicago Sky made in the WNBA draft tonight, and they're on the clock for another one. We'll get you all caught up right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf with you, Score Evenings, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back, live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you for a few more minutes here on Score Evenings, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, taking you right up to Cubs baseball, continuing their road trip in San Diego against those Padres. Pregame coverage, 8:05. Pat and Ron on the call for first pitch at 8:40 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. And, of course, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Breaking news of sorts here on The Score. And breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. WNBA draft in full swing right now. The Chicago Sky with the 10th and 11th picks, both in. They made that 11th pick as we were in break. I probably going to butcher this first name. I'm going to attempt to say here that they took with the 10th pick out of Slovenia. It's Ajsa Zivka out of Slovenia. If I'm getting that wrong, my most sincere of apologies. As somebody with a hard to pronounce name himself, I do my best. I do my best, and I hope I got close with that. But Ajsa Zivka out of Slovenia, taken with the 10th overall pick. She was in the Euroball League. Sky General Manager Jeff Pagliocha said in a statement, "Forwards who can stretch the floor will always hold high value in this game," and that's exactly what he says. Her name again. He says her name. I'm just going to say she provides. "We're excited to land someone who is not only skilled, but has been playing at a high level professionally for years." She was in the 2025 Women's Eurobasket qualifiers. She averaged 7.8 points per game. And yeah, man, just like in the men's game, that they get them playing young over there in the Euro leagues. And so they see a higher level of competition before they ever get to the pros here in the States. And then with the 11th pick, I know a player that a lot of Sky fans and WNBA fans were hoping would end up in Chicago. I know Lawrence Holmes at the end of Spiegel and Holmes mentioned this name as one of the players he hoped would end up in Chicago. Haley Van Lith, the point guard from TCU, She goes to the Sky at the 11th pick. So I know a lot of Sky fans very, very happy about that. I'll be totally honest, upfront, and transparent with you. Not the biggest WNBA guy. Not a sexist thing or anything. Just not something I've gotten into yet. Maybe I will in the future, but I do know the name Haley Van Lith, and like I said, people who do know the sport, including Lawrence, were hoping that the Sky would have her slip to them at number 10 or 11. And I was watching the draft board, and you know how they have the ticker and best available player up there as we're waiting for the next player to get drafted. She was, according to ESPN, where I was tracking the draft, she was the best player available, I think, from pick 8 on. So kind of a slip to them there at number 11. I'm sure Sky fans happy about that. And I'm sure Lawrence and others will have much more on that tomorrow right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. There was an NBA story I want to touch on real quick before I wrap this thing up that may or may not relate to Chicago sports. The Phoenix Suns today fired head coach Mike Budenholzer after just one season and after missing not just the playoffs, but the play-in tournament with the largest payroll in league history. Competing at the highest level remains our goal, and we failed to meet expectations this season. Our fans deserve better. Change is needed, the team said in a statement. This is the third consecutive season. The third consecutive season. And again, with the highest payroll in all the NBA, that the Phoenix Suns find themselves looking for a head coach. 2 years ago, it was Monty Williams, who really had that thing moving in the right direction. Had a young roster that was playing hard for him, climbing up the Western Conference ranks. A lot of people are watching that Suns team as like an up-and-coming team to watch that would be making noise in the near future. And then new ownership came in. They juggled the roster. They spent some money. The whole thing fell apart, and they blamed Monty Williams. The following year, they do more to that roster, spend more money, bring in Frank Vogel. They barely get into the playoffs. Not good enough. Frank Vogel is looking for a job after winning 49 games. So then this year, they go out and they get themselves Mike Budenholzer, who, of course, won a championship with the Bucks a few years ago, was out of the game for a season after he was relieved of his duties by them. And it really seemed like a match made in heaven. Budenholzer from the Phoenix area, a lot of experience, good, you know, success, a track record of success, winning. He knew how to deal with superstars and high expectations from his time in Milwaukee and winning a championship there. And things never really got going the way that they wanted them to get going. But then it just completely fell apart after the All-Star break. 10-18 after the All-Star break, 12-32 against teams with a winning record. They lost, I think, 8 or 9 of their last 10 to close the season. And again, fall out of not just the playoff, but the play-in picture. And for the third straight season, decide the head coach is the problem and fire him. And I said this kind of, in a way, relates to Chicago sports. Some of you might maybe just got in your car and you're like, why is Rami talking about the Suns on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score? What do I care about the Suns and if they fired Mike Budenholzer? And if they just can't seem to get their stuff together there in Phoenix, despite spending more money than anybody ever has in this league. Well, and a lot of you might know this, the Suns' owner is Matt Ishbia, whose brother, Justin Ishbia, has been pursuing a purchase of the Chicago White Sox. And as I learned listening to Spiegel and Holmes today, I learned a lot listening to those guys, WNBA, White Sox ownership, things of that sort, that Ishbia and his group, including his brother, Matt Ishbia, who's part of it, own 35% of that team. And I'm not here to cast aspersions or plant seeds of doubt for a guy who doesn't even own the team and doesn't even own the majority stake of the team at this point. He's maybe the future owner of the Chicago White Sox. And quite frankly, the way that things have been going on the South Side for quite some time now, any new owner would be a breath of fresh air for White Sox fans and probably gives them a better chance than what the Reinsdorfs have for the last few years. So this is just me 30,000 feet up in the sky looking at this thing and going and connecting dots and going, maybe this is a problem in the future. I don't know. But I look at that Suns team and that ownership group, which again, Matt Ishbia, brother of Justin Ishbia, the majority owner and part of Justin Ishbia's group that's buying up pieces of the White Sox little by little. And man, do you really have a plan? Or is it just throw money at this thing until it works? Which is cool. Like, don't get me wrong. I was saying earlier, the Cubs should be throwing a little bit more money at some of the problems that they had in the offseason. Looks good right now, but I still would have liked to seen them throw a little bit more money at the problems that they had in the offseason. But you need a plan, too. And you need, like, some steadiness, some consistency, some continuity. And you can't just fire the coach every year and just keep throwing money at the problem with no coherent or cohesive plan. Now, it's his first time owning an NBA team, so, you know, there is a learning curve. Maybe they'll get it right, and maybe this next coach will be the right coach. They're talking about trading Kevin Durant this offseason and building this roster around Devin Booker, and obviously Bradley Beal is on his way out there. So maybe they will get it right, but just as much as I like the billionaire owner who comes in and wants to just spend on a team and buy his city a championship, I'm here for it, man. I really am. I'm 100% here for that. There has to be a plan. There has to be some semblance of a plan and competent people in place that know what they're doing, and I don't get that vibe from Suns ownership based on what I'm seeing. And I don't know whether or not that reflects on future White Sox ownership or not. I do not know that. I'm just, again, connecting dots here and looking at what maybe could be for the Chicago White Sox. I welcome it. I welcome Justin Ishbia buying the team, and I hope that there's better management of said team than what we've seen in Phoenix since his brother bought the Suns. We shall see. My thanks to Mike Renner, CBS Sports NFL and Draft Analyst, as well as Cody Westerlin, covers the Bulls for us here at The Score and 670thescore.com. If you missed either of those interviews, check them out, 670thescore.com, or using the rewind function on that handy-dandy, totally free Odyssey app. My thanks to you for listening, contributing to the show. Thanks to Tyler Farengel on the other side of the glass. I'm back Wednesday morning, sitting alongside Mully on the Mully and Hawes Show. Till then, Rami Makhlouf saying thanks for listening to Score Evenings. And Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Cubs and Padres coming up next.